Yo, what's the deal, airwaves, air folks, internet people listening? It's me and my man's Eric Thomas back on another Wednesday night. And this is the last second shot. Boom, 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 boom. Is it too early for a bomb, Eric?
No, it's not too early.
Oh, man. What's up?
Hey, man? Never too early for a bomb, man.
Never. Never too early for a bomb. Man, it's great to be back on the air another Wednesday night.
Yeah, another Wednesday night, man. Another one. Empire ain't on tonight. We might go longer tonight.
Hey, we might go. We might go to 9:30. Nah, I got things to do. Oh, man. I just want to thank everybody who's listening right now. If you're listening to this on demand, our podcast, or if you're listening live, I love our live listeners. Y'all need to start interacting with us. Tweet us. Do something. Chat with me. Yeah, it's
hey.
A chat room and Blog Talk.
Hey, should we put the phone? Should we open the phone line tonight?
Should
we do that?
Open the phone lines. We might do it. We just might do it. Man, so, hey, it's week one is in the books officially for the MHSAA girls basketball. It was a pretty exciting week. Down goes Frazier. I guess we should start off there. The number one team in the state takes a loss. Woo! To Bay City John Glenn. Salute to them young ladies. They, I heard they played a heck of a game. I wasn't in attendance, but I followed it closely. Our own Eric Thomas was there. Let's talk about that game to start.
Oh, yeah. That was a heck of a game, especially on the end of Bay City John Glenn. I mean, Martinez, you know, had a hell of a game. I think she ended up with 18 points, had about 5 threes, didn't miss a single three, I think, as a team. John Glenn probably hit about 8 or 10 threes, you know, as a team. So they really shot the ball extremely well. You know, when we have a barrage like that, it's hard to overcome. It's hard to overcome. I think they got up by probably about 12 at one point, 12 or 13. So, yeah, Latham made an effort to come back. You know, they pulled within, I think, 6 at one point. But, you know, it was just a hot day for basically John Glenn. It's a real hot day, you know.
For sure. Now, it's so interesting because, I mean, nobody underestimated Bay City John Glenn, but they weren't number one. So you start the season off going against who many people have written in their into their number one spot, and you come out and you beat them. And then that takes a lot of momentum into the next game, and it just keeps carrying going. It's like, hey, if you start off beating the number one team, I mean, and nobody thinks you're supposed to beat them already because it's, you know, it's not like you're just, you know, a Class A team. I mean, is Bay City John Glenn class?
They're Class B.
They're Class B, so it's not like you're a Class A team with the enrollment and all of that. You just come out and you compete with one of the best teams that Matt Putt says is one of the best in the country. And not only compete, you win. That's a heck of a way to start your season.
Yeah, it's a great way to start the season, and they carry it over. I think it was yesterday or Monday. They had an 18-point win against I forgot who they played. It slips my mind. I'm tripping right now, but I'll probably remember in like an hour. But, you know, they followed up with an 18-point win. And, you know, they're just keeping the train rolling. Just keeping the train rolling. So, you know, a win like that will take you to another level.
Definitely. And so – that brings us into it. It was really an exciting day for games on Saturday. Midland-Dow nearly takes down our number two team. Some people have them number one in the state in Detroit Country Day.
Yes, so, yes. You know, Midland-Dow played exceptionally well, shot the ball well, handled the press well for the first, I would say, 3.5 quarters. Wasco was just money in the paint. I think she ended up with 18 points, about five or six boards. She was, you know, she showed her left hand and right hand, stepped out, shot a couple of jumpers, showed an all-around game. Ellie Taylor, 22 points, hit a couple threes. But Country Day righted the ship, amped up the pressure a little bit, got very hot from the outside, especially Destiny Pitts, who ended up with 35. You know, that she had a sensational game. I think she had 35, probably about like 6-7 boards in her own right. So yeah, that was a game, man.
We touched on Ellie Taylor on our last episode, and when she started off with 44 points. Okay, so she scores 22 against Country Day. That's 66 points in two games. Going into last night's game, which Midland-Dow won against Flushing, she was averaging 33 points a game. That's that's also a crazy start to the season. I mean, just letting it fly, bombs all around, just it's just letting it fly, letting the bombs go. Man. And so, all right. So, what other games at the Icebreaker? And when you were thinking about Bay City John Glenn, you were thinking about they were playing Frankenmuth, that they got the 18-point win over.
Right. You're very right.
All right. So now, in the rivalry game, Huron played Arbor Prep. Huron won against Arbor Prep in a very valiant effort.
Yeah. Huron, you know, played real stingy defense, and ran on every opportunity that they had against Arbor Prep. You know, Arbor Prep just really had an off shooter night. You know, every team has those, plus it's early, so you're still figuring some things out. I know Arbor Prep had a couple shooters out. You know, they had a couple key injuries. So, but take nothing away from Huron. Huron came in there and played exceptionally well. You know, and they spreaded the wealth. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, really jumped out the box as far as scoring. So, you know, everybody had their share. They really played as a team, and you know, they got the win. They went into Arbor Prep, and won round two of the backyard battle.
The battle for Washtenaw County, that was something else. I mean, you know, now the series is 1-1. Like, heck of a way to bounce back, not digging yourself in too much of a hole. And then we have the battle of the guards. It seemed like a three-way battle against Robichaud and Liggett, where Nia Ahart and Kendall McConnachoe had great efforts versus a great shooting day for Caleb Brown of the Robichaud Bulldogs.
That game right there, I was probably more viewing that as a fan than, a guy that's gathering information for a show. I was watching that as a fan more than a reporter because, you know, you talk about, you know, Ellie Taylor letting bombs fly. All three of those guards was just letting it go. I mean, everybody was hot from the outside. I think Caleb Brown probably had like 17 first half points, and, you know, she had 5 threes in 1.5. You know, and she was deadly. She was real deadly, you know. You know, every time it seemed like the Liggett was going to make a run, you know, Kayla would respond with a three, and keep Robichaud in the game, and you know Robichaud had a slight lead at a couple points. So yeah, and it was a show. I mean, Nia put no crossovers. Kayla had a couple moves herself, you know, and Kendall, who was, you know, was really flying under, you know, flew under the radar. Nobody really expected her to come out as she did. She had 13 first half points herself on her way to, I think, a 16 or 17 point game. She was in a rhythm. It was, you know, it wasn't flashy like, you know, Ahart and Brown, but it was smooth. She was very efficient.
And that kind of ties back into what we talked about yesterday, or I should say our last episode, is when I was telling you about the Cavs game. Kendall McConnell ended that game on a she ended that game on a run before she fouled out. And it just seems like she's found a rhythm. You know, she's found a rhythm, as well as Nia Ahart has found a rhythm. But, you know, she's one of those players that we've come to expect it from. Everybody around the state has expected, you know, the former Seton Hall commit, you know, one of the best prospects in the state to play like that. But, you know, a lot of people doesn't really know about McConnell because, you know, there has been a Rosso and a Rostovsky in years past. So this year, Kendall has taken that step.
Oh, yeah. It definitely looks like that. And, you know, I'm still not sure if she's, you know, 100%. I mean, you know, the way she looks, she looked 100%, but, you know, she's probably still at probably 85-90% from the knee injury. So, you know, if her, you know, once she becomes full circle and she keeps this rhythm, you know, keeps this thing going, her play going, you know, she makes Liggett that more potent, that more dangerous.
Definitely going to be interesting to see her gain that confidence going into the gist of the season and the meat of the season. You know, all it is confidence at that point. You just want to have some type of confidence going forward. You know, it's an old cliche, but, you know, 80% mental, 20% physical, right? So, you know, I mean, you know, at this point, it's probably more, you know, just getting everything in her head right to match with the body. So, yeah, you know, that's always something to look forward to. So, that's just about all the icebreaker games, isn't it?
No, just about
one. Did we miss a game? Did we miss a game?
No, Southfield got a big win over Canada Park. Yeah.
Yes. Southfield. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are going to think that's shade. No, a lot of people are going to think that's shade. It's not.
No shade at all. Genuinely,
Tim
Miles. No shade at all.
We don't have to shade the school on Tim Miles, okay? That's not shade. I genuinely was trying to figure out how we got all the games out of the icebreaker. The late night game. Southfield High versus Chandler Park. You know, Southfield High is a young team. So, you know, they squeaked out one versus Chandler Park, or I shouldn't say squeak, but they won against Chandler Park. And they're starting their season just like they started last year, you know, had a three loss season last year. So, you know, they're fired up, you know, they're motivated in what's their last year as the Blue Jays as well. So, you know, came out strong to start the season. Congratulations to them as well on the win.
And yes, congratulations to Southfield, you know, and one game I don't want to forget is Flat Rock and Skyline. Flat Rock got a big win over Skyline the early morning game on Saturday. Flat Rock, everything looked crisp. You know, they moved the ball real well. You know, they were well balanced. You know, just real disciplined, man. Just got a, you know, just a real fundamentally sound win for them, you know. So They got a big win on Saturday as well. Don't want to forget them.
Definitely. And so before the icebreaker happened, I had the pleasure of seeing Livonia Clarenceville, which this has always confused me about Clarenceville. And I know I probably asked this on Twitter, but I did not get an answer. Is Clarenceville a city, or is it a Livonia? Like, it's not a Livonia public school. Clarenceville has its own school district. So I'm just always confused when I call it Livonia Clarenceville.
Yeah, I feel you on that. You know, so hey, can somebody like tweet us and tell us the real, please, so we can't,
somebody
you know,
has to let us
stop
know.
Messing up.
But so I had the pleasure of seeing that we're gonna have some sound clips on from that as well. You were at a game last night, right?
I was at a game last night. Over it's a school on Lasser, right? I think yeah, Lasser, right? It's on Lasser,
mm-hmm.
And you go past Country Days, a little bit past that, about a mile down. It's called Marion. You know, and I watched this team, they call themselves the Patriots. I think that's their mascot, the Patriots. They're from Warren. And it's Cousino. The school's name is Cousino. They got this certain guard, you know, it's what's her name again? It slips my mind.
Who could that be?
Slips my mind sometimes. Oh, Kiera Fletcher, yes. I went to Marion versus Cousino last night. Had the pleasure of watching one of the best players in our great state. Marion fought hard, but Cousino pulled away. You know, pulled the win out. They won by 10. Fletcher had about 17 points, about 5 assists. And about 7 to 8 rebounds. So she had a nice game, for herself. And Kay McArthur, the freshman, shot the ball well. I'm here to tell you that 25-point game that she had, where she had like, 7 to 8 threes, that's no fluke. That girl can actually shoot the ball. That's no fluke. She can shoot it. The rest of the team was just real scrappy. They have a real scrappy team. That likes to get out there on the boards. You know, don't think because they're small that they won't rebound. They will rebound. So, Cousino is a good team. Marion, is obviously with Coach Cicerone there. And matter of fact, how do you pronounce her name? Is it Cicerone? It's Cicerone, right? I'm tired of messing up.
We have all types of questions tonight. Definitely Cicerone.
Okay. Because I'm tired of messing her name up, man. But yeah, so you know we're her at the helm. Marion's gonna be a smart team and a thinking team. So they played disciplined and smart and moved the ball around real well. So, Cousino just had a little bit more in the tank last night. So yeah, Cousino is a good win for Cousino. A good win on the road for them.
Definitely. Now, as I said, last Friday, I went out to Livonia Clarenceville, and they were playing Wayne Memorial. Now, both teams had lost their previous 21 games. So Wayne Memorial's troubles actually went back to 2 seasons without a win. And I was able to go ahead and look at that game, and I actually have a clip here before we go into that from Camry Clegg post game.
All right, y'all just broke a 21 game win streak. How did it feel?
Man, it feels great. You know, it feels good to start a legacy here and get it with my team. This is a great team win, in my opinion.
Okay, you got going. Midway through the second quarter, you all really found a rhythm. What went into that?
Jarvis really kind of got into us, it was really just first game jitters, we're really young, so a lot of freshmen, so this is their first varsity game, so they had to calm down, and then once we found our rhythm, it was smooth sailing from there.
All all right. And so the final score was 70-7. Wayne Memorial gets their first win in two seasons in a big way. And so, you know, in that interview, Clegg did mention that it was a young team. So how about the freshman, Janae Terry? She made her high school debut big, you know, in a big way. 17 points, 5 assists, 4 steals. And, hey, that's a good stat line. But Cameron Clegg was in a slouch herself. She went for 24 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, and 4 steals. And also, Amara Chikwe had about 12 points and 7 rebounds and a handful of blocks. So, Wayne Memorial has made it known that, you know, teams aren't gonna blow them out by 70 points anymore. Or, you know, it's a new day. It was crazy to see because, I mean, you know, obviously, you put them in your top 5 teams. I know Eric has a smile on his face right now.
a little bit.
Eric is grinning. He's letting you on. Yeah, I caught it. But definitely a big way for the season to start. I mean, we had an upset. We had a near upset, you know, a very good game. Then, you know, we have Cousin O making their mark. Remember, if a lot of people don't remember, I said Cousin O's going to be one of those teams that's going to fight for a Breslin appearance. And they came out and got a win against the defending champs, nonetheless. And it's just so good to see. Everybody has come out swinging in their first week of the season, you know, just laying all the cards out there and just going for it.
Oh yeah. It's been an interesting week, and you know, I'm glad it's starting out this way. You know, that everybody's just coming out, you know, with a point to prove, or you know, you see, you know, teams with new faces on them, and they're making statements. So, you know, it does a lot of good for girls basketball.
Definitely. And you know, I actually had the time to read a few articles. I love reading, Eric. You know, I love reading.
I can tell.
So you know, I actually got to read a few articles this weekend. You know, if you follow me on Twitter, if not, you should at Sports Spoken Real. I was able to go ahead and look and see, you know, an article that was written in the. And again, you know, I don't name a lot of names here, but it was written, and it was written about Wayne Memorial, and it was about the game, but you know, it inferred something, you know, about them. It almost called them cheaters, you know, because of the two transfers that they have, And then that made me interested, so I went digging into the internet, and then I find, you know, just trying to find out, okay, what are exactly the rules, and what are other states doing? And upon that, I just found a lot of articles and blog posts with, you know, what I'll call it is outrage. That's the word I'll use, about people transferring. It's so... Wow. I mean, like, the MHSAA has rules about kids who transfer. And, you know, the rules are what they are. But, wow. People are really mad that you know, student athletes would choose to be in a better situation for themselves. It's wow. Now, what do you think about transferring? Do you think it's a good thing for the game? Do you think it's a bad thing, or do you think it just is what it is?
I think it depends on the situation. It really depends on the situation, and you know, it's a touchy line, you know, at some points, but you know, I don't think it's good or bad. I think it's good in the sense that so I think transferring is good in the sense that it allows kids, like you said, to put themselves in better situations if, you know, they're, you know, sort of unhappy in you know, a situation where they have, you know, where it's justifiable, or, you know, their family has a situation, you know, whether it be, you know, they can't pay tuition at a school, or, you know, the student has to go to another school because, you know, she wants to get her academics together. You know, it's not all about basketball, and that's, you know, in sports, period. It's not all about sports all the time. And I think that's what, you know, people make it out to be when it comes to kids transferring, and why you see all this quote unquote, you know, outrage that you speak of. You know, everybody thinks it's just about basketball, and they don't think about the family of the kid, or the kid, you know, or the kid themselves.
Well, first of all, let's just be realistic here. There's not many people who can move just because their kid wants to play basketball somewhere. Like, that's a really good life to live. But the interesting thing about every time you hear about, oh, well, that team is only good because they got transfers, or, wow, you see all those transfers, is never, you never hear an opposing team of players say that. Okay? You never hear, like, the players say, oh, wow, they're just getting transfers. No, it's always, you know, the people who don't play. You know, the parents, the coaches, you know. Now, I'll always say, if the kids get out 10 games, you know, as the MHSAA has regulated, because, you know, because of the circumstances aren't that they move, then who cares? Who cares? Like, I mean, like, literally, you are, first off, I think what should be focused on by coaches who complain about transfers is coaching your team. Over so many years, we've seen teams win state championships that has had no Division I players on the team, no college players on the team. You know, if we're being honest, we've seen that in the last decade or so. So there's something that those coaches are doing, you know, that doesn't involve transfers, and they probably don't care about the transfers either. They could probably care less, you know, about if a kid transferred, you know, to a school they have to play twice. Why? Because they're coaching their kids and they're developing their kids. You don't have to worry about a team being too good if you're in the gym with your team and making them better and putting them in a position to win.
Right. Very right. If you think
a team getting transfers is what's stopping you, then you are thinking like somebody who's going to lose. Like, if you're thinking that just because the team has the most talent, they're unbeatable, then you're already thinking like you've lost. I mean, that's number one. That's that might be the biggest thing of it all.
Yeah, it is, and it is glaring when, you know, it says a lot when coaches think like that, or parents think like that, and, you know, is because these kids ain't think, you know, like you just said, these kids really ain't thinking about that. They just see five players in another uniform that they want to beat. You know, it don't matter, you know, when they got that on that court, it doesn't matter where they came from, you know, what, you know, city they're from, what school they went to 2 years ago or a year ago. All that matters is that final score and whether they win or lose. And, you know, I think like you just said, you know, coaches and parents, a lot, you know, people who watch the game and, you know, people who coach the game shouldn't really worry about the kids transferring. Just be prepared for that team that you're playing. Just be prepared. They don't worry about, oh, they're only good because of the transfers. Well, you know, make sure your team is ready for that good team.
The most interesting thing about the whole complaint about, oh, there's transfers is you only hear it for certain teams. Now, my sister played high school basketball, so I've been around the game for, you know, quite a minute. It's been happening for years. You know, you see blog posts and articles calling it the newest epidemic. The newest epidemic, like it's H1N1 or it's like smallpox or something. Like, no, this has literally been happening for years, and nobody was outraged back then when I was younger, not that I know of at least, because hey, there was I'm gonna come out and say it. It was probably tougher back then, and it was probably tougher back then. It was probably more competitive. Like you had more competitors. So, even to fast forward it now, there's teams in the state of Michigan. You know, again, not saying any names because that's not what we're here for. We're not here to single anybody out. But there's teams in the state of Michigan that gets transfers every year. They literally reload with transfers every year. It's not something new, but certain teams get called out. And that's unfortunate. You know, guys, if we're gonna be honest about something and we think something is a problem, let it be a problem for everybody, and let it be because it's genuinely ruining the game. Last week, when we were talking about the officials, I said, hey, you know, don't protest because your team lost. Protest because, you know, this is generally just bad for parties involved. Like, don't protest because people are getting transfers and they're winning. No, that's ridiculous. Transfer, like, if you think it's bad, then I would like to hear you say, like, why is this a bad thing?
Yeah.
Why?
And, yeah, why, really, you know, really, why? And, you know, and we're not, and like Dan said, we're not here to call, call certain teams out or anything like that because we feel no team, no school should be called out because they got transfers. Nobody should, because unless it's ruining the game, I don't see the game being ruined, and neither does Darren. From my perspective, from what he just said, he doesn't think that the game is being ruined by transfers. So it's not like, you know, we have 1,000 transfers every year. It doesn't happen like that.
It's a very small percentage.
Very small percentage. And, you know, it shouldn't be talked about the betting. Like I said before, it all depends on the situation. You know, no, everybody thinks it's just about basketball. And well, if you really look into why that kid transferred, why the parent decided to move their child, you might find out something that you didn't know. And you might find out something deeper.
Also, I mean, and here's the thing, and here's what I deem really unfair. A coach, a high school coach, can leave for reasons other than geographic measures. They might lose a few kids, see a better opportunity somewhere. Do they have to sit out 10 games? You know, like, that it might be a high school that pays more, you know, and who can blame somebody? I mean, obviously you want to be in it for the kids, but, I mean,
some people have financial needs. So do they go over to the new school and sit out 10 games and let their assistant coach the game? Isn't that a bit of a different standard we're holding everybody to?
I mean, just
something to ponder.
Yeah. You know, and like I repeat, we are not here to call anybody out because we're on the side of the people that get on the team, of the teams that get transfers. Nobody should be called out for transfers because, and I keep saying, you know, we don't know the situations. It might be certain situations, geographics, academics, financial, be anything. It's not just basketball. It's not just, you know, football or baseball or whatever. It's not whatever the kid plays. It's not just because of that. It might be a deeper reason or a better reason, you know, quote unquote, for the move. And I don't think teams or players should be greatly penalized for that. If you move to, you know, a different district, I feel like, and not in the middle of the year. If you move in the middle of the year, you know, sit out the rest of the year and play next season, but you know, if you move at, you know, and to a new district to start the year or whatever, you should be able to play automatically. And if you don't move, then just shut up the 10 games and sit and play the second half of the year. I don't see why the NHSA makes this rule so complicated.
But and honestly, it's not even the NHSA, because I was reading an article, and the writers suggested that all transfers in any sport should have to sit out a whole year because people are manipulating the geographic part of it where they can play immediately. Why? First off, the 10 games I feel like is enough. But even the 10 games, I feel like, why are we trying to police this? Like, okay, when you think about all the teams that's had, like, multiple transfers to start a year, no names. Can you think of one that's won the state championship immediately, or for that matter, won one?
No, not in recent memory. I can't think of one at the moment.
I can't either, and I've thought about this for a day or so.
You know,
why would you ever want to have a kid have to sit out a whole year?
You know, that's ludicrous in my opinion that anybody would suggest that or, you know, feel that change should be made. Your transfer have to sit out a year. You're taking away a year of basketball for these kids, or any sport. You know, any sport. You're taking away a year of the sport that they love. You know, I mean, and a lot of these kids probably never had somebody say, "Hey, you can't play." You know, they've always been able to play wherever they've gone, whether it be high school, AAU, or in the park somewhere. So to make them say, "Hey, you cannot play for a whole year," what's the point of doing that? I don't get it.
What do we gain? What is gained from this?
I don't see a gain from it.
And if you're lobbying for this because you know you don't want competition, you should probably do some soul searching. You should probably just do a little bit of soul searching because it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, very ridiculous. But go ahead.
You know, stepping off of our soapbox, you know,
this weekend we are going into the Best of Michigan Classic.
Yes.
There's going to be some good games. I guess it was announced, Eric, let me know before we went on the air, it was announced that it will be at the Martin Luther King High School, the best girls basketball program in the city of Detroit. And, you know, they'll be hosting the event this weekend.
A lot of good games. Be there. Please, you know, please be there. You know, it's a lot of good games, a lot of great girls to see, man. A lot of great girls to see.
Definitely, yeah. We have Grand Rapids Catholic Central versus the Southfield Latham Senior High School. That's going to be big. Grand Rapids Catholic Central, one of the best teams in Class B. Southfield Latham coming off of an early loss, a rare early loss at that. So that's going to be huge. When you think about it, it's almost like a perfect matchup because Grand Rapids Catholic Central has the size. They can shoot, they can run, and they can play defense. When you think about Lather, they have the size in the post. They can shoot, they can run, and they can play defense. It's going to be a good matchup. You know, about what, seven or eight Division I players on the same court in that game, two Central Michigan commits, two Minnesota commits, and a Cincinnati commit, and another junior with a bevy of offers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a big game. It's another one, right? It's another big game right after that, right?
Is it?
It is.
All right, we got to stop playing around because we're really going to think we don't know. So, yeah, after that game, we have Toledo Rogers, Country Day. Man, Toledo Rogers, they're a good team. I got to see them at the Michigan Mega Scrimmage that they came up for. Got to see them last year in a winning effort against Southfield Lathrop. Listen, they are really good. Big in the post. It's a real hard matchup. You know, for a team that you can't see too often, you know, you probably get to see them in a scrimmage, probably get to see them in summer league, but don't get to see them too often, and then they're that good. It's a hard matchup.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it on the nose. You get it on the nose with that one. I mean, and Rodgers is so, you know, long and big and skilled, and Country Day, obviously, that's a, you know, our number two team in the state, and you know they feature a few D1 players, and there's, you know, and make no mistake about it, they're skilled as well, and you know they can get very hot from the outside, so I'm really anticipating seeing that one. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one. Actually, I can't wait to see that one.
And how about the sneak peek of the freshman guard for Toledo Rogers that we've gotten to see? Man, her versus Kayla Webb is going to be something to watch. Like, you know, obviously Kayla Webb has great shooting ability, and the guard for Toledo Rogers, she's just so long, and she gets to the rim, and she's very aggressive. It's going to be an interesting post matchup, but the guard matchup on the outside is interesting enough to, you know, interesting enough to catch your eye.
Yeah, it is. You said just about everything. I can't even, you know, follow up on that one. You know, you said about it, you know, just about everything. So, yeah.
And so what other games are we looking forward to at the Best of Michigan?
There's Heartland and Arbor Prep. That should be interesting.
That's an early game. It's an early game, yes. Heartland and Arbor Prep should be interesting. Heartland, as I said, when we did our previews of teams to watch out for, Heartland is a very good team. Arbor Prep,
a very good team. Arbor Prep came, you know, lost on Saturday, came back and got a win. So, you know, they're gonna be looking to show like, hey, we got game. We can compete with the big guns, and it's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And you know, we get a chance to see if Harlan's outside shooting, especially Cockerham, can kind of thin out that crazy all-prep press. That's a hectic press to get through. And their man-to-man defense is it is also just as good. So we get to see, you know, her and our Miss Basketball, one of our Miss Basketball candidates, Nastasia Chambers, you know, go at it a little bit. You know, that's gonna be an interesting matchup. That's a, you know, I know I would pay to see it. I don't know about y'all. I know I would pay to see that.
Definitely. And from the eastern side of the state, we have Port Huron Northern coming down to play Depth on Friday night. We also have Southfield, the school on TML, versus Grosse Pointe University Liggett. Those should be interesting in itself. But a game that we haven't really mentioned that's going to be really, really good is going to be Muskegon on the Shores making a rare trip down to go against Caleb Brown and Palmer and the Dearborn Heights Robichaud Bulldogs. Now, I'll tell you what. Muskegon Mona Shores is an interesting team in the sense that they have one of the best players in the state in Jordan Walker, but you just don't get to see a lot of them. You don't get to see a lot of them. And they're going to go against a good Dearborn Heights Robichaud team. And that game is slated for 5:20. Leading up to, you know, the main events, I guess you would say in Toledo Rogers and Country Day and the other games as well. But that's going to be an interesting game. A lot of people don't know what to expect outside of Jordan Walker from the Mona Shores team.
Yeah, definitely. Like, so, you know, I only seen, you know, once. So, and like you said, we don't really get a chance to see them a lot. So, you know, having them come down here for this type of event, this bigger of an event, will be a pleasure. It will be a pleasure to see them against a good Robichaud team who has a couple good guards in Caleb Brown and Palmer, as you just eloquently stated, I should say. Yeah, it should be a good one. It should be an interesting one. It's one of the more interesting games on this bill, man.
Definitely. Now, excuse me. Now, looking into it, I just think it's going to be interesting for Flat Rock to come from downriver now, because they're going to have essentially a game against King, and King will be at home. And so that's going to be interesting, because Flat Rock is a really good team. They had a resurgence last year where they just were they were a surprise team going into the playoffs last year, and they nearly made it to the Breslin, farthest they've ever made it in school history in anything. So now they go against King, a King squad that, you know, we're going to find some answers about. We're going to find out some answers about them this Saturday. You know, obviously they have Alicia Norman, who, you know, you and I both think she's just a great talent. They have the DePaul commit and I'm drawing the blank here, Eric.
Yeah, Michaela Kelly, man. Come on, man.
And Michaela Kelly. And then they have Tia Tetford as well. So, I mean, not hurting for any type of talent, but there's still question marks of how good,
you know, they'll be in the tournament and going down the stretch. Can they make it back to where they made it last year against Marion? You know, can they make it to that stage in the state playoffs again? Well, I think Flat Rock is that first real test where they're that first real test where you just have to see, like, you'll be able to gauge it fairly.
Yeah. You know, those are all good points, and I second everything you just said. And, you know, some kind of underestimate Flat Rock, and, you know, they just don't really know, you know. So I think while this would be a test for King, this would be a, you know, a good game for Flat Rock as well. You know, you're going to be, you know, in King's house. So, you know, King will probably have everything working for him, you know. So it'll be a good role, you know, essentially a good role game for Flat Rock. And, you know, if they come out with a, you know, if they have a good showing, they'll give them a lot of confidence going into the rest of the season.
Definitely. Now, this is the Last Second Shot podcast. We are winding down. Hey, Eric.
What's up?
Did you happen to catch the M Live poll this week that featured a lot of great players? What player do you think has the most clutch ability? And it was a poll, and you have until Friday to vote.
Yeah, I peeked at it.
Interesting. I mean, the ironic thing about it is, I want to say like 90 to 95% of the list, their teams literally steamroll people, and it's a lot of blowouts. So, you know, saying they're clutch is interesting to say the least. I mean, because, you know, how can you say you're clutch if you're just blowing out people? Not a bad thing to have, you know, just winning in blowouts. But that made me think. Over the years, we've seen a few last-second shots. Plug. but let's just take a trip down memory lane, man. What are some of the best clutch moments that you've seen?
I'm going to start off. This is one. I just remember it's two in one game. It was the 2005 state semifinal, Lathrop and Granville. We all know, you know, Jerky Hughes, Tamika Williams for Lathrop, and, you know, the great Alyssa DeHaan, 6'9", you know, for Granville. And, you know, it was a tight game all the way, and Granville had a late lead. And, you know, it was only a few seconds left in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Jerky Hughes gets the ball reversed to her and, you know, hits a deep three to tie the game and send it into overtime. And then in the overtime, you know, Hughes comes up big again, you know, with, you know, two shots in the, you know, two mid-range shots to seal the game for Lathrop in the last, I want to say, you know, in the last 40 seconds. To see that game on their way to that that state championship. For all you people, I had to go to 12 miles. Special my mom, so don't get mad at me for going to 12 miles.
I'm going a little bit more recent. Last year, actually, King versus Marion in the crossover game. It's tied with 17 seconds left, and you know there's five players on the court that Coach Cicerone can go to. She decides to go to Kara Holinsky. Kara Holinsky drives just a little bit past the free throw line, you know, looks for a shot, goes up over Alicia Norman, who was playing great defense, and she sinks it. And Marion wins that game by two. Listen, man, that was one of the closest games Marion had ever had in their two game
or I should say their two-season reign as state champions. So King and Waterford Kettering are the only teams to ever be within 10 points at the end of a game. So, you know, a lot of people didn't know how Marion would respond, you know, to being in a clutch moment because they hadn't been there before. I mean, they had been on the wrong side of it versus Whitney Young last year, but they had not been, you know, successfully been in that position. And Helinski steps up. She hits that shot, you know, and I can actually hear the announcer right now, Helinski. I told Eric that I was going to upload the audio because it was just so enthusiastic, and it was definitely a big moment.
Definitely a big one. Do you have that audio, or did you didn't get a chance to?
Nah, I didn't upload it. I don't want to get sued for copyright infringement. You know how the MHSAA is.
We we ain't gonna front like we got it. We don't got it.
I don't.
We don't got it. Another one that comes to mind as far as clutch. 2011 PSL title game, Pershing and Renaissance, and you know that was another overtime game, and I think you know the shot that sent it overtime, you know, Caprice Dennis hits a off balance three to keep Pershing in and extend the game. Eventually Renaissance won. To everybody's surprise, you know, because, you know, like Marion, these last couple years, you know, during those years, you know, 2010 and 2011 of Pershing, they haven't had a lot of close games, especially in the PSL. So everybody was kind of, you know, shocked that not only did it had to take a three like that from Caprice to extend the game, but, you know, Renaissance was leading and eventually won that game in an overtime effort.
All right, and so I'm gonna go back to 12 Mile, but Renaissance versus the Southfield Lathrop Senior High School. This is the fourth year in a row that Renaissance and Southfield Lathrop would meet, and
you really gonna do this?
You know, yeah, yeah, and so, you know, a great game by Lathrop, great game by Renaissance. You know, it had been a relatively quiet night for Asia Boyd, who was, you know, a Division I player, went on to play at Kansas, and in the, I want to say, what is it, 3 or 4 seconds left on the clock, Eric?
About four. Yeah, four seconds.
Okay, about 4 seconds left on the clock. Asia Boyd takes the inbound pass, drives it the distance of the court almost, and hits like a free throw line runner, floater, and Renaissance wins.
Actually, that was Blake Calhoun.
I always say Asia Boyd. I think they had switched numbers or something. Okay, so it was Blake Calhoun. No, because you know, she wore number 3, and at one point in time, Asia Boyd had wore number 3.
Right.
At some point in time. But it was Blake Calhoun who hit the game-winning shot. And for the fourth year in a row, Lathrop lost to Detroit Renaissance in the state playoff.
You really had to go there, didn't you, though? You really had to go there?
I mean, it happens. I went there when Coach Jackson was on the line. I brought up the 4-year struggle with Renaissance. It happens. You know, like, I love Lathrop. You know, I'm Lathrop through and through. You know, obviously by all of our shows, we end up mentioning them, but you know, it happens. We lost. It's okay.
Yeah, it happens. You're right. You know, I think I needed therapy for like a week after that. You know, after that happened. I want to say it was a week.
Oh, man. It was.
Well,
it was
I was a junior, so you were a you was a senior then, wasn't you?
I was a senior. That was our last time to win anything, you know, as far as state champions, because, you know, just frankly, nobody else was going to win anything. It hurt, but, you know, we pulled through, you know. So, yeah, I mean, those were some great clutch moments. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more of those moments when talking about like clutch genes. Like everybody on the list they mentioned, I think they have it in them. I think they have it in them to elevate themselves to that level. You know, obviously I like blowout, you know, if I'm a coach, I like blowout wins more than I like 3 second wins, you know. I mean, maybe you learn more about your team in those 3 second wins, but you actually pull out less of your hair more in those blowout wins. So, you know, but, you know, I'm looking forward to, just as a spectator and as a journalist and having this podcast, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, a few game winners. You know, hopefully we get some on Saturday. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the videos and actually seeing, you know, all the young ladies who were on that M Live poll step up in those moments.
Oh, yes. I mean, like you said, all of them, you know, have it in them to do it. And they're all, you know, leaders of their team. And, you know, and all those players, everybody in the gym knows that's where the ball is going, you know, to those players, for those respective teams in those moments. So, you know, I want teams, you know, not rooting for teams to, you know, purposely just, you know, make games close. But, you know, hey, if y'all have a couple buzzer beaters in y'all, you know, make sure I'm there when y'all do it. You know, I'm just saying, just make sure we're there. So we can see it, you know. That'd be nice.
Definitely, man. It's been a great show, like, bro. We done went through a cycle of emotions, man. We at 8:30 right now. As we said, Empire not on, so y'all don't even got to rush to get off and stop listening to us. But you know what I'm saying, all good things must come to an end, or at least an intermission, and. Yeah. Any closing thoughts, my brother?
Closing thoughts is, you know, hope everybody out there is having a good practice, you know, and good practices leading up. If you play on Saturday, you know, good luck to everyone. And to everyone who is not playing on Saturday, hope y'all have good workouts, you know, have good practices. And, you know, thank you to all the listeners that's listening right now, and you know who might catch us on the replay, the playback. And you know, don't be afraid to interact with us. You know, both of us will be in attendance at the games on Saturday, so you know, don't be afraid to talk to us. We're very open. You know, we're very personable. So yeah, and you know, outside of that. You know, in the great words.
Eric, are you trying to place a dating ad or what? Gosh.
Man, look. I'm not trying to place a dating ad. This ain't the type of business, you know. Yeah.
He's like,
I will
take
a couple phone
walks.
Numbers, but I'm just saying.
He said, I like long walks along the hardwood court. Gosh.
But, you know, I'm just letting them know, like, you know, we not Hollywood, you know. You know, we not Hollywood like that, you know. You know,
not yet.
You know, don't be afraid to see, you know, if you see it speak, you know what I'm saying? Don't be afraid.
I'm not Hollywood yet. Man, but, yeah, hey, listen, we appreciate all of our listeners. We appreciate all of the athletes who interact with us, who give us interviews, man. We'll holler at y'all next Wednesday. This is the Last Second Shot.
Hey, chill until the next episode.